Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob here. And just a quick reminder before we get to today's podcast with Linda Holmes, I just wanted to ask if you would be so kind as to vote for us for the podcast awards for 2013. Rob as a Podcast is nominated in both the Best Video Podcast and Best Produced Podcast of the Year categories. Now, what you need to do to vote is just to go to podcastawards.com. Our categories are two of the highest categories up on the page. Just click Rob has Podcast in each of those categories, Best Video Podcast and Best Produced Podcast, and then scroll down to the bottom of the page and enter your email address and then submit your vote. And then one other thing, be on the lookout to see if you get an email to confirm your vote, and just watch, because sometimes that email will show up in your spam folder. So if they ask you to confirm your vote, you just need to click the link to reply and say that you are a real person and not a bot, because bots would never vote for Rob Has a Podcast. That's right. So thank you so much for your support. With your help, we will get the first ever Survivor Roast to happen this January or February. So thanks so much for your support and enjoy the show with Linda Holmes. Hey, everybody. What's going on? Rob Sesternino here with a very special bonus edition of Rob Has a Podcast. We're working overtime on the weekend podcasting for you guys to bring you the most comprehensive coverage of reality TV out there. So we have a very special show today. Here with us on the line today, we have a really great guest. Very lucky that she is with us today. She's the editor of the Monkey See pop culture blog on NPR and the host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, Linda Holmes. Linda, how are you?
I'm great. I am great.
And we also have with us from Survivor Know-It-Alls, here he is, Stephen Fishback.
Oh, hello. Hello. I didn't get a ding. What the hell? All right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So good.
Screw you, Rob.
This is going to be a lot of fun here with Linda and Stephen. And this podcast came about, as I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Linda is a longtime reality TV fan. And Linda, in a minute, I'd love to have you talk about your background with
sure.
reality TV. But she recently wrote a blog for the Monkey See blog talking about how the tribe has broken, how sexism is silently killing Survivor. So definitely a number of issues that we want to discuss here as far as it pertains to Survivor and reality TV and wherever else that takes us. It's going to be a lot of fun. But Linda, you have a very unique backstory in terms of reality TV and Survivor and Amazing Race. And I would love it if you could share some of that with people who may not be familiar with your current work.
Sure. I started writing in 2001. I started writing about reality TV, writing recaps for what was at that time Mighty Big TV, which then became Television Without Pity. And I recapped Amazing Race from the very beginning of it. And then I started recapping Survivor a little bit later. I recapped three episodes of Amazon, and then I took it over in Pearl Islands, and I recapped until Jonathan Penner was medically evacuated in Heroes and Villains, I guess. So all the way through there. So I had stopped by the time Steven's season happened, but I was there for part of Amazon and part of and all of All of It.
Yeah, and you had been watching all the way through, right?
I'm sorry?
And you still watched all the way through, even when you weren't recapping?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. All right. Good.
I have probably spent more time thinking about Survivor than anyone who hasn't been on it. I have a many, many theories.
Merge Jaffer is going to take exception to that.
Well, there are certainly plenty of obsessives, yeah. But I am definitely one of them.
And so... Also, are you watching The Amazing Race still all the way through?
I have missed a little bit more of that in the later seasons than I have of Survivor. The only time I took a break from Survivor, I think, was during the season when Russell and Rob came back. I skipped the beginning of that until I knew that Russell was gone.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh, no.
You hear so often about people who say they'll never watch if Russell's on again, and you know. So
I realize it's an unpopular opinion, but I find that guy among other things. It's not that I hate him. he's so boring to me, because I felt like after I had watched that guy for 5 minutes, I had seen the whole shtick. I had seen the whole thing. It never changed. Every bit of nuance that he was ever going to allow was in the first 5 minutes. So
yeah,
except when he got eliminated and he cried. That was good.
Yeah. All right. So good that we have that that sort of backstory. Now, how did you make the transition from recapping about shows like Survivor and to this really amazing gig that you have now with NPR?
Aren't I the most, isn't that ridiculously lucky? Yeah.
I'm going to get my pen out here. Let me just take notes on how to do something like this.
Yeah. I left Television Without Pity after it was acquired by NBC and Bravo. I was in New York for a year working for them, and then I left. And they were starting up this pop culture project at NPR. And my best friend, Stephen Thompson, worked at NPR and wanted to kind of, you know, had kind of introduced me to some people. And like I said, they were looking to get into pop culture at that time a little bit more. And I don't know exactly what the plan was, but I kind of came in and said, well, here's what my plan is. And so we started the blog, and then a couple of years later, we started the podcast, and it's kind of been a job that I've been able to build, which has been extraordinarily lucky for me. So.
Yeah, and you guys are enjoying tremendous success, also.
You know, it's really hard to tell. You're inside your own job; you can't really tell. But I just kind of sit on Twitter and yak at people, and it seems like it's good.
Yeah.
I
know I go on the iTunes TV and film charts and look and see how, and I'm seeing this NPR Pop Culture Happy Hour sitting there at the top podcast of the week more often than not. So you guys are doing something right.
Yeah, well, people have been so incredibly kind to us about the show. And obviously you have a little bit of a built-in advantage, because if you want your podcast to sound great, tape it at a studio at NPR. So,
yes.
You know.
Oh, all right. Well, so let's jump into the article that you wrote. And now it's a couple of weeks old, but it, you know, there's some good and bad to it, but in that you know, there's been some more issues that have come up that we are able to talk about since then, but the thing that really seemed to be at the center of this was the episode where Brad Culpepper was talking with Candace was on Redemption Island, and the whole inciting incident was that Candace had to decide, or John had to decide, who to give the clue to the hidden immunity idol. And this was when Candace told John, as you say in the article, let's give it to Monica. And then Jeff Probst started to chastise John over, hey, you let your wife tell you what to do. And then we had, then on the other side of things, then Brad Culpepper telling Monica to go and burn the idol in the fire. And you felt like there was an unfair double standard set forth by the show.
To me, it was an extraordinarily obvious double standard. And I felt like it was a good opportunity. I mean, for as long as I've been watching Survivor, I've been telling people it's a really interesting place to look at gender dynamics for a bunch of reasons. But this, to me, was just an especially clear example. And, you know, later, Brad Culpepper had said, well, it wasn't really like that because, you know, you didn't see it, but Monica was trying to rip it up, and so I told her to put it in the fire. It wasn't really like that. But the truth of the matter is, ultimately, the show is the show. And the show shows what the show shows. And what the, and what the show wound up putting on the screen was, when you're a guy, if your wife even says, let's do it this way, and you sit there and listen to what she has to say, some dude is going to be like, what? You let your wife boss you around? And it has that kind of gross feeling of like, what do you whip?
Right.
And then, but if you're a guy and you just say to your wife, put it in the fire, put it in the fire, put it in the fire. And then your wife gets up and goes and puts it in the fire. Nobody says to her, what do you let your husband boss you around? Because it's normalized completely.
I mean, to play devil's advocate here. Well, I've got a horrible ego. To play devil's advocate, there's I don't totally buy that the let's give it is not as much of a command as put it in the fire. Because, like, yes, she says the word let's, but it's not like participatory. It's not should we give it. you know, to Monica, it's let's do this, honey, like do this. And I agree that Jeff's response is absolutely, you know, that to me seems like the most sexist element, because you're right. It's like totally cliched, the sort of D-bag bro, like the whip thing. But I didn't necessarily see that stark a difference between the way the two things sort of, you know, panned out.
Well, let me just clarify here. So in your article, Linda, that one of the bigger points that you make is that you say that when Candace says, let's put it in the fire, you say that let's is a suggestion more so than a command. So Candace was merely suggesting to John that he give the idle clue to Monica. Right. And if anybody wants to, you know, stop and pause here and read through Linda's article, I'll have a link to that on the show page. If you want to just get caught up before we go any further. All right. So sorry, Linda,
and
sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no. And I'm perfectly okay with, like, if you want to say, hey, you know, she's really, you know, giving him her idea of what they should do, not just suggesting. That's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. At the very least, they're the same. At the very least, she's giving her, you know, I think you can take them as quite different, but at the very least, they're the same. At the very least, the guy is doing the same thing she did. And still, you know, she gets that, her husband gets that response of, like, you know, you're a puss, and his wife doesn't get that. But honestly, like, I think if you've watched the show for long enough, that one of the things is, I mean, as a Jeff Probst thing, and honestly, you know, I love Survivor, and if you love Survivor, you in a way love Jeff Probst, right? I think he's a great host in a bunch of different ways, but this is like a long-standing thing with him, and I suspect you guys both know this, having been in the situation, is that in addition to, like, whether it's sexist, like he's more into talking about men than he is about women, which is something that I generally find to be the case. But he also, even within the world of men, like, certain kinds of men are interesting to him and certain kinds of men are not interesting to him.
You mean guys like me and Steven are more interesting to Jeff?
Well, but like Jeff, but like, let's talk about last season, right? Like, Jeff has a reputation for just loving the alpha males, the bro-y guys. He was obsessed with Cochran, right?
Remember what Cochran's introduction to the show was, right? Cochran comes in, and he's a smart dude, I think, and immediately comes in and sort of goes belly up to Probst and kind of says, I want you to approve of me. I want you to put your alpha stamp on me. And I think after that, I think if you demonstrate your kind of, that you're kind of, you want his approval, he treats you much better than people who are just kind of like, I don't really, like, there are certain guys who I think just patently didn't care whether he thought they were alphas or not. Right, and I think those are some of the guys where he's like, well, that guy wasn't interesting at all, you know? I don't know.
I think he also sort of has this really 80s movie kind of idea of how, like, society is stratified. And, like, Cochran really plays into that, where Cochran is very clearly the 80s nerd, whereas, you know, there's maybe, like, someone else is not going to be, like, such a nerdy nerd, you know? I mean, in a sense, that's, like, good casting, right? You want the most archetypal character.
I was going to say that Jeff looks at the world through, like, Breakfast Club colored glasses, that he wants everybody, like, if he can't put you in a box, then you're not as interesting to him.
Well, I think certain types, I guess part of it for me is that I feel like he's been looking for Colby Donaldson ever since Colby Donaldson. For him, that's like, why can't there just be that guy every time who is, like, buff and smart and charming and chivalrous and women love him. And I mean, I think there's a huge amount of kind of projecting and envy. And I think there's a sense of, like, that's the way, like, that's the pinnacle of playing Survivor, man. And so I think the guys who get the most shortchanged by him are actually the guys who aren't really nerdy. They're really smart. They're really smart and they're really, in some cases, quite athletic. Like, look at a guy like Yule. Like, he thinks Yule's the most boring guy who's ever lived. I loved that season. That's, like, my favorite season. Because I love it when bullies get vanquished. And he's always kind of like, meh, that season, meh, meh. I don't know. I love that season. And I love Fiji, by the way. I am a person who loves Fiji. Love
Fiji. You love Fiji? Why? What do you love so much about Fiji? Yao Man?
Oh, well, Yao Man's cool, but I maintain that one of the greatest tribal councils in the history of ever is when they got rid of Edgardo. When I watched the tribal council where they got rid of Edgardo, which I do regularly,
wow.
I am like an intoxicated person. I am like a crazy high person when I watched that because of the way that these guys I really did not like, their faces just collapse. Like, oh, it's very wonderful.
So bear with me while I try to make what might be a nonsensical point. Which is that, you know, is it not possible that the same show which allows a bullying storyline to develop that, like, you know, creates this story of these kind of D-bags getting their comeuppance, could there be something essentially there that also contributes to the show's sexism? Because it does, you know, come into, you know, just sort of magnifying the archetype of a character.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely 100% right about that. And I think that there are parts of those archetypes and that kind of like what Rob was talking about with the Breakfast Club colored glasses, there are parts of that that lead to really good and satisfying and cool stories. It's just that there are other stories that I think get a little bit undersold. Like if you have any player, but it tends to be more because of the people they cast, I think this tends to happen more with women. If you have a player who their way of winning is kind of being really chill when everybody else is fighting and arguing and getting into a lot of personal stuff, the ability to remain calm and maintain good relationships with everyone is a really important skill if you actually want to win Survivor. And it's really, that is a perfectly valid way to win Survivor. That's how Kim won Survivor. That's really how Earl won Survivor. And I just don't feel like the show is ever as interested in those people. And I understand the argument that, you know, people thundering and yelling and getting in fights is better television to some people. It's not necessarily to me, but I understand it is to some people. But there's a difference between that and saying, like, those people are great players. Like, every time somebody says Russell Hance was a master manipulator, I just laugh hysterically because I don't think there's any evidence that that's the case at all.
I'm a big defender of Russell Hance, and I think some of the stuff in here is I agree that like the Russell Hance legend is you know ridiculous, and Russell Hance's confessionals are often ridiculous. But I do think the way he works over people on Survivor is very savvy, and I feel like that like people are so focused on the idols and the bravado, and then you just see him. I mean, he may not even be able to do it anymore. He might be like so into himself, but like just some very small personal interactions with him in seasons 19 and 20, I thought were phenomenal. But
yeah, the first time around with Russell Hance, I think there is a lot of merit to what he was able to do the first time around. And then I think maybe reading his own press clippings, I think has really distorted his own view of himself, but not to get too much onto Russell. I think also part of the issue with Survivor is that the show is, you know, the length of time that the show is, 42 minutes, has not changed from the first season, but the number of people in the cast has also ballooned. Sometimes, you know, we're in the first season, we started with 16, and we really tried to, you know, spend a little bit of time understanding each of the characters, where as opposed to, and I in one of your earlier blogs, you had written about Rupert early on this season, Linda, and you were talking about how the amount of screen time has sort of shifted, whereas it's no longer more of a utopian everybody, we're going to feature everybody, we're really going to spend a lot of time on only a certain number of people, then a lot of the other characters who have more nuanced stories, I think, tend to get lost.
I think that's right. And I think it's, you know, look, when I talk about gender stuff on the show, you know, most of it, I don't think is intentional on anybody's part. I think it's just a matter of, you know, how you cast a show, how you pick the people, how you focus the energy of the show. And I think it's really difficult for them not to become fascinated by kind of the same, what feel to me like the same stories over and over. And I don't understand why, why the show isn't better at casting more women that even the show seems to think is interesting, are interesting. Like the show every season, I feel like, casts a bunch of women that it immediately decides are really boring and nothing ever happens with them except they walk around and then they get voted out. And then you wind up with people saying like, well, you know, what can you do? Women are boring. And it's like, well, cast more interesting women then. I don't know.
Well, do you think...
Yeah.
I was going to say, well, you know, you also touch on this in your blog about the number of women in bathing suits or even gratuitous shots of women in bathing suits seems to greatly exceed the number of shots of men in bathing suits there. But do you feel like Survivor especially is a bit of a slave to, hey, we need to have, you know, four drop dead gorgeous women on our season? And more often than not, these women tend to not be the bigger personalities, whereas we get like 10 shots to try to cast interesting men. And maybe we'll use like one or two of those spots and we'll cast, you know, a guy who's just really good looking. But for the most part, we have, you know, more chances to find an interesting male person on the show than an interesting female person on the show.
I think there's some truth to that. But in fairness, you know, in fairness to the show, in fairness to the casting, they cast a lot of men who are then who walk around with their shirts off and all that stuff. It's not a matter of like whether you're showing off your body as much as it is what are you showing it off for? Because, and part of this is not the show's fault. Part of this is culturally speaking. But culturally speaking, if you look at the kind of people you would cast in a TV show to walk around in bathing suits, the kind of women that you're going to cast are not necessarily being cast for being athletic. So they're not necessarily being cast in a way that's valuable to them in playing Survivor. You can look good in a bathing suit as a woman and not particularly be an athlete. And you see that every year. Whereas when men look great in a bathing suit, in the opinion of somebody like Survivor, it's probably going to be because they have big muscles and they're powerful. So there's overlap between what makes you good to look at and what makes you a good player, because you get the big, like, dude athlete. Whereas there's less overlap with the women. Some of the great-looking women are very athletic, but some of them are not. And with men, just culturally, there's a little more of a tie between ability and appearance, I think.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really great point.
And so, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, there are plenty of wax-chested dudes running around on that show who are there partly because they look great as wax-chested dudes. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Now, you know, going back to the title of your article, I feel like everything that we're talking about is very interesting, but you say that how sexism is silently killing Survivor. Do you feel like these issues are what will eventually end the show?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Part of what I'm getting at in that title is that it's killing it for me. It's killing it as something that I enjoy. And it's killing it as something that a certain number of other people that I've talked to enjoy. Do I think that that's going to take down the show as a property that can make money? Probably not. I don't know that anybody else cares about this stuff as much as me and the kind of people that I tend to talk to about it. But, you know, I don't think it helps. And I think that over time, you know, it's certainly making it a lot less enjoyable to me. And that's kind of more what I meant. It's perhaps not the most straightforward use of the word killing.
So to speak to that point, would you say that rather that Survivor over the course of the years from where it started has more begun to appeal to a lowest common denominator than where it was when it originally started?
I don't know about that. I think I am more convinced that the worst thing that's happened to it for me, in addition to all these issues, is that it seems to have lost faith in its own central premise. So that's why you get all this stuff with idols, which bore the hell out of me, and tribe switches, which usually bore me as well. Redemption Island, which I hate. to me, the initial concept of that show is so elegant and so enjoyable to watch that that's what I like. I don't necessarily care. Like all this, the more you elaborate on it and add stuff to it, the less I like it and care about it, and the more random I feel like it is.
How do you feel about the blood versus water? You'd think the blood versus water twist would sort of help go back to that central premise to a certain degree, because you are sort of bringing, you're putting people into the context of their familial relationships, which is sort of their more human aspect, right, rather than their kind of like game bot, idol playing, you know, tribe swapping aspect. I mean, how are you feeling about that so far?
I think that's a great point. I think it has tended to humanize people a little bit and bring out different aspects of their personality. And the other thing that's been good about it is that it has provided a little bit of genuine disorientation for people who think that they fully understand how to play Survivor. People have been baffled how to play the idea of having, especially when you had the tribes where like you had the returning people on one and the loved ones on the other one, people were baffled by what to do about that. So that you had, was it Culpepper who was like, well, you have to get rid of all the people who don't have a loved one on the other side. And then you had somebody later saying, you got to get rid of all the people who do have a loved one on the other side.
I
like the fact that nobody knows what the hell to do about it, but I don't know. It is kind of more fussing around, and the whole thing of bringing back old players, they never bring back anybody I care about. So I'm always like, oh, I didn't even like this person before, and now they're on again. But
Well, you referenced this in the earlier piece that you had written, talking about how the record of bringing back players in a season with new players, I believe it's 9-1 male of 9 times they've brought back men to compete with new players, yeah, and only the one time with Stephanie LaGrosse, which was actually the first time, but maybe more indicting that they haven't done it since, you know, 2005 or whenever the heck that was. So yeah. Are there any female players that you think would be good candidates to come back and lead a tribe with new players?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Sophie's great at Survivor.
Sophie was very disappointed. She really wanted to be on this call. I thought it was going to be get a little crazy, a little party line with too many people on the call.
I think Sophie played great. I think Kim played great. I think part of what made One World boring to a lot of people was that she was so, like, she and her alliance were so calm the entire time. It was very hard to kind of upset them, and so it wasn't perhaps, I guess, as, you know, scrambly enough for some people. But I think Kim's a very, very good player. I think Sophie's a very, very good player. I think Chelsea, who played with Kim, is a terrific player. There are a bunch of them. I have to go back and look at lists because I'm getting to be such an old lady, and there are now so many people who have been on Survivor that they could populate a small town.
But I would say for the producers of Survivor, and I don't even know if I disagree with this, that I feel like we have these people who are very savvy players, who are very calm, cool, and collected, or we have people who are, I think you mentioned, used this word, people who are not very good at the game and who will flame out spectacularly. If I'm a TV producer, I think I'm more interested in the people that are going to flame out spectacularly than somebody who will, you know, coast to an easy Final Four appearance.
I know, but I love nerds, like not nerd nerds, like not necessarily Cochrane kind of nerds, but like Survivor nerds, like people who I feel like are thinking it through really well. I find that really interesting, but I know that a lot of people don't. And I find, as I said with Russell Hance, like seeing somebody throw the same kind of, you know, hissy fit that they've thrown a bunch of times in the past is not interesting to me. So, and it was the same thing with Brandon. Like when Brandon came back, I was like, this is just a bad idea. And you could tell the first time you watched him that it would be a bad idea. And it was a bad idea. And, you know, there are certain castings that kind of cross the line for me and just sort of unpleasant to watch. And I completely understand why a TV producer would be more interested in people who flame out spectacularly. But there are plenty of nutball women if you want nutballs. Like, if you cast a bunch of nutball dudes and a bunch of boring women, and then you say, well, the women are boring, what can we do? Cast nutball women. There's nothing wrong with that.
Do you have some examples of nutty women that you think we need to bring back?
I would have to look at lists. Like, I do think they have cast many fewer women who kind of have tempestuous personalities. I mean, you know, you have originally you had women like Sue and
right.
Stuff like that, but it's kind of been a while. You know, I think they figured out eventually that those people weren't necessarily received very well.
Mm-hmm. Shambo comes to mind of recent years, but I don't think even in the last like 3 or 4 years we've had a Shambo.
Yeah, that's true. That's approximately what I'm talking about, because I was about to say he never struck me as being very good at playing, but that's kind of what we're talking about.
And they were desperate to bring Shambo back, right? They wanted to bring her back, but
she
didn't want to come back. Yeah. On our Rob Has a Podcast subreddit, I had opened this podcast up to some questions or things for discussion. Here's a question that is from Garfield Likes Lasagna. He wants to know, are the... He does. You might say he loves it.
That's what I was going to say. Can't argue.
He wants to know, are the examples of sexism seen on Survivor problems with editing, casting, or are we throwing most of the majority of the blame on Jeff Probst?
You know, the truth of the matter is, if you haven't been in on the making of the show, it's very hard to know what they are. I mean, honestly, Sophie said the most interesting thing on Twitter when this article first came out. She said she saw this more when she watched the show than she experienced it when she thought about it when she was on the show. So maybe it really is in the translation from the real event to what shows up on the screen. In terms of Probst, as I said, I'm very unclear on how much of it is gender and how much of it is just he only likes a certain kind of dude and he doesn't like either other dudes or almost any women. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't think he's a bad guy, but I think he's not real tuned into kind of what his own biases are and when he's got his thumb on the scale in a way that sometimes is not great. But I really don't know. I don't make the show, so I don't really know where those decisions are getting made.
One of the things that came up in the last couple of weeks was, and this actually became a big controversy on the podcast, was the scene with the massage where Laura Moret was giving the massage to Otis. And a couple of people, specifically people who don't like Laura Moret, said that this was, you know, a shameful thing that this married woman was trying to manipulate a situation on Survivor by, you know, giving a massage to somebody who was in a position of power on the show. I wanted to know if you had any thoughts about that particular issue.
I think there's a lot of. Certainly my impression from watching the show, and I feel kind of silly saying this to two people who have done it, but I sort of feel from watching the show, like there's a fair amount of physical contact and familiarity that comes along with the living conditions. So I think a lot of those rules are suspended. I think people wind up sort of, you know, sleeping much closer to other people than they naturally would, or, you know, seeing people without their clothes on or whatever you want to say. I think some of those things are a little different in those circumstances. And I think it's entirely possible that giving somebody a massage is one of those things where people feel a certain relaxed, that, you know, that boundaries are a little bit relaxed. I guess I didn't really think about it that way. I mean, I definitely thought of it as her trying to curry favor, but not in like a sexy way necessarily, just in kind of a personal way.
So on this week's episode, or in the last two episodes specifically, there was a tribe swap. I know you're not a fan of tribe swaps, but we ended up with tribes that are almost all men versus women, where we have only Sierra on one tribe with all of the men, and then only Vetus on a tribe with all of the women. And I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on how the show handled that particular arrangement.
Well, Well, you know, assuming as I do that when the show says they picked something at random, they actually did. The show was kind of stuck with the fact that that's the way it's played out. And I'm not surprised that they, you know, that they mentioned it. And I think there is some tendency when people are on a new tribe to bond over whatever is easiest, which sometimes is gender and sometimes is something else. So I think people have some tendency to you know, that the women, maybe the women would stick together or whatever. But that seems to have just been something that happened because of the way they picked the tribes. And I don't have a huge issue with that, although, you know, I think not getting rid of Vetus is pretty stupid.
How about the idea of, you know, we want to keep Vetus around over, the women said they were going to work with each other, and then so quickly to turn on Kat and then Laura B. Did you think that there was anything of note there when we're talking about this particular subject?
I think that the interesting thing is, I think the Laura B thing was pretty purely a social thing to me. It looked to me like they just didn't like her. You know, they weren't terribly comfortable around her. They kind of felt like she was, you know, not really one of the group. And I think she wanted very badly to be one of the group and wanted to fit in. And I think I really felt like that was almost completely social. They just did not dig her and sent her out for that reason.
Now, you're not a fan of the Bonehams, right?
I don't feel like they're bad people or anything like that. I just, the whole, oh my gosh. I mean, remember, Rupert was the first season that I recapped, and I felt like I spent that entire season watching various insane attempts at pirate BS on that show. And I got so sick of the pirate thing that it was like, just, I never want to see Pirate Man ever again. And I was so mad when they gave $1 million for the fan, whatever it was. That was maddening to me. There's absolutely no way that a bunch of people watching television ought to be able to give you the same money that you get for actually winning. Boo.
So if you were an Indiana resident, you would not have voted for Rupert for governor?
I haven't investigated his platform. I'd have to know what his platform was. I have to assume it would have something to do with piracy.
All right, so going back to Vetus and Tina, there was an interesting quote from the show this week where Tina was talking about how she would be very excited if her daughter, Katie, was to end up procreating with Vetus.
That's so weird.
She said, I have the quote here. She said, I was going to try to do her voice, but I'll restrain myself at this point. I would be honored if he took an interest in Katie just because he seems like a straight up guy. However, the guy who gets Katie is going to have to hit her over the head with a club and drag her into his cave because Katie is not a very flirtatious girl, but one can dream. I'm ready for grandbabies.
This really horrified Andy Dennard on Reality Blurred. He was really up in arms about this.
It did. And I should say, first of all, I like Andy a lot. I think Andy's an enormously smart guy. But I will say I did not take that as seriously as that. I kind of felt like she was, you know, you do sense that people, when they've been doing the show long enough, kind of are, you know, they're so accustomed by that time of doing those interviews and confessionals and stuff that I think they are kind of, you know, she was on a roll. She was giving them a little thing. She knew what she was doing. She was giving them a little thing. She was giving them her, here's my Tina tries to set up her daughter with this dude thing that I'm going to give you. So she says it in these silly, is it a bad thing to say? Yes, it's a bad thing to say. But I also feel like she was mostly goofing. I don't know.
And you can just imagine the producer on the other side of that conversation, just like big silent smile, like miming, cracking up at what she's saying, but not wanting
Of course. I've always assumed that there's a certain amount of goosing that goes on where if you start to say something and they start to smile or you know, there's a little bit of a sense that this is a pleasing and good direction. People do it a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's how you kind of get these goofy comments.
There certainly is like a Stockholm syndrome when you are the survivor players and the producer's like, yeah, yeah, like nodding, like, okay, well, all right, more, okay, whatever
right.
you want.
Right.
So go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, but if Katie does not seem overly flirtatious to Vetus, is it possible that Katie does not like Vetus and that would be what would require him to hit her over the head with a club?
I didn't. That's not what I took Tina to be saying. I took Tina to be saying she won't pay any attention to you unless you club her, I guess. Was the idea. But yeah, I mean, I think she was more saying Katie just doesn't pay attention to people paying attention to her, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, it was a dumb thing. It was a mortifying mom thing to say.
Yeah. Oh, what were you going to say, Stephen?
I have a more general question before we totally like get off the topic of, you know, the broader systemic issues of sexism in Survivor. So I did a little number crunching and the exact numbers are actually surprisingly difficult. But of the 34 players who have had an immunity idol, and this doesn't count like, you know, Sugar gives one to Ace and he doesn't play it. And she gets it back from Ace. Ace doesn't count in that equation.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah, you missed it. Bon, he was great. Ace, they should bring back Ace.
He
was the bald guy in Gabon. He was like, he was actually out pre-merge. He was like, he spoke with an affected British accent. He was the photographer.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Okay, so 34 players. Of them, 24 have been men and 10 have been women. Yeah. And that doesn't count for like that. That's just absolute number of players. You know, like you know, if it's total idols, it probably skews a little bit higher to the men, because you know Malcolm gets a few, Russell gets a few.
Right.
What do you think? What does that mean? Why are there 2.5 times as many men as women carrying hidden immunity idols?
Couple of things.
Is the immunity idol a Freudian substitute for the penis?
I had never thought about it that way, Rob. That's very
wise. We'll look into that.
I think if there's a systemic reason for that, I suspect it's because, as we talked about, they cast women a little differently than they cast men. I think they cast men a little more for proactive alpha qualities, and maybe those are things that cause them to go out and find idols.
Right.
But the other possibility, I mean, you know, some of it is chance and who's where at different times and, you know, I don't necessarily know that you can read everything into it. I suspect that's most of it. I suspect casting is most of it. Although, you know, I could easily turn this into Linda Rance about 400 different things about Survivor. But the thing that I hate about the idols now is that they just stick them in a tree. Now, it used to be, at least they buried them. So at least you had to know where it was. Now they just stick it in a tree or under a rock. And so, of course, you can go out into the stupid woods and find it, dummy.
Well, not this season. This season, nobody's found them.
Yeah, but it's like, if you went out and looked, it's in the hole in the tree.
Right,
That's always the answer. The answer is look for a tree with a hole in it. It's in a hole in a tree.
But there's still more men than women going out and looking in the hole in the tree.
I think that's right. Now that is Freudian.
Yes. we'll leave it at that. How about there was a really good question from somebody, and I can't find it now. Two times Survivor has divided tribes by – actually, three times Survivor has divided tribes by gender, all of the men versus all of the women. Do you have any specific thoughts on how the show has handled that?
I do think that there's been some tendency to get a little bit like, you know, will the women stick together or will it just all be ladies fighting and hitting each other with their purses? Like, there have been times when I think they've made a little bit more of a kind of, it'll all be cat fights, like that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I think most of those, that part of it has been okay. I think the question is more, do they care about the results? I mean, that's one of those was the Kim, one of those was the Kim season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like I said, I thought she was great. I thought she played great. And you know, kind of the show didn't really seem like it cared very much.
Well, that's what I don't get. Like, this is I feel like Kim is the ultimate argument, because she, you know, she wins fan favorite. She's probably the most beloved, you know, character among super fans. Like, you go on Survivor Sucks, her thread is like 100 times longer than anybody's. People are love Kim, you know, she was loved by America. She played a perfect game. And yet, how are we talking about her as a boring player?
Right.
Well, I will say, but going, and I love Kim, that I find her to be a lot of fun. I had her on the podcast a number of times, but I think that Kim, for the most part, and maybe this has to do with the lack of a rival for her on that season, that for the most part, it was a boring season, Survivor One World. It was not, you know, we spent a lot of time with Tarzan and his antics, and then it was sort of Kim in like a game bot mode. And I remember saying during that season, it's like, boy, Kim is playing a great game, but we never see anything about her personality. And I feel like that maybe almost like a great poker player, she sort of like hid that from us. And she does have a very warm personality. Maybe that would be different when we come back, but or if she came back. But I do think that she was lackluster as a reality TV personality.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I think that for me, watching her operate was always really fun, and I did feel like she was doing a lot. But that's you know, that kind of thing becomes personal preference. It becomes, do you think it's boring to see somebody kind of calmly move among other people trying to, I mean, quite honestly, some of this is how Steven was, I think, on the show.
It's very kind boring. Of,
you know, just being sort of methodical and normal and trying to avoid making enemies. And, you know, if you think that's boring, then you would think that's boring. But I, you know, I never do. And then that's, again, that's personal preference.
No, but Steven had a lot of, like, quips to the camera and, you know, had more personality than we saw from Kim. And maybe it would
I really
be,
like this conversation. This is a great
yes.
conversation.
But maybe with Kim, if you brought her back with All Stars and she had a target on her back, which I think she probably would if she were to come back, maybe you see Kim with her back against the wall really become a more dynamic personality on the show.
Okay, but if we're going to talk about dynamic personalities and we're going to start to say, like, well, people come back on the show because they have dynamic personalities. I like Tina, but does Tina have a dynamic personality? I don't think Tina has a dynamic personality. I certainly don't think Monica has a dynamic
That's interesting.
And again,
well, Monica is there because of her husband.
Perfectly nice women. I just don't necessarily think they have dynamic personalities. Neither does Aris. I don't know who thought Aris had a dynamic personality. I understand, like, seems like a very nice guy. I like yoga as much as the next person. You know, do I think he's like an exciting dude? No. When they said he was coming back, I was kind of like, really? Is that him? Okay.
Well, a couple of things there. Yeah, I totally agree with you, what you're saying with Monica and Tina. And don't forget Laura. I feel like they basically cast the same person three times this season with those
yeah,
three particular women.
I literally forgot who she was, so yeah.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And I know that they are, you know, they like to find like the mom type, but they also like the athletic mom type, as opposed to maybe like the mom type you might see on Survivor, you know, early seasons.
Right, right.
But that being said, yeah, I thought that was a head scratcher. I think with Otis and his brother, I think what they liked about that was I think they were looking for people who had a uneasy relationship, people who would come back on the show and potentially maybe they went through casting like, oh, yeah, I would totally vote out my brother. And so I think that they liked that dynamic of that it was an uneasy relationship. And I feel like they wanted conflict in the relationships and you know, they're, you know, you have two good looking guys who kind of like, oh, they might dislike each other. Let's put them on the show.
Yoga fight.
yes. Can we talk a little bit about the direction that the season is going? And Steven and I talked about this at length on Wednesday night. But there's this idea that Tyson has where I got to take out Otis because he is him and his brother, if they get back together, it's going to be a big problem for me. Do you think that is the right strategic decision for somebody like Tyson to do? Or do you think that it's too early?
No, I think that's the right decision. I think, You know, I was so anti-Tyson in his first season, and then he came back, and I was like, I still don't care. And then, actually, my best friend started off this season by saying, Survivor, stop trying to make Tyson happen. And but I feel like he's gotten to be a lot more interesting. And as one of my other friends said the other day, his level of, like, mischief when he talks about stuff like, I get everyone to eat extra rice and stuff like that, his level of mischief seems kind of not malevolent, as opposed to people who, like, burn other people's clothes or whatever. I'm kind of liking him this year. Which is bizarre to me, but I'm kind of liking him this year. And I think he is making the right decision. I would not let Aris and Vetus get back together. I think that is very dangerous.
I like that, just that scale of measurement of the level of mischief, because I actually think it's, like, a really, like, good way of thinking about what they try to do accomplish, because they do try to bring back these people who will, like, mix things up, but then you get, like, someone like Brandon who's burning things, or someone like Philip who is just a lunatic, and you know, I think you're right, like, there's, like, a level of mischief factor that, like, they've hit the right mark with Tyson and with some of the other guys this season too.
Right, I think that's right.
Now, this season, Survivor brought back Jervis, who famously on the original Survivor, him and Joel were comparing women to cows. And I don't really remember the exact quote, but that was a big deal where Joel got voted out for being a sexist pig. And I believe it was actually Jervis that said that. Are you excited to see Jervis back? And do you think he has reformed his viewpoints?
I have no idea whether he's changed his view on women or cows or women as cows, but I was tickled that they reached all the way back to the first season, because I do feel like they, and The Amazing Race is like this too, they're way too infatuated with doing all-star seasons made up of the last, like, three seasons of people. I liked that they went back a little bit farther with him and Tina and some other people. You know, I don't think he's the most fascinating guy, but he's been very charming this year. I think he's been, I think he did his niece no favors, but, you know, I don't know. I don't have a huge issue with Curtis.
Do you think that there are any major differences between the way that Amazing Race handles gender issues than Survivor?
No, I think they have had some of the same. I think they've had some of the same problems, which are when you decide how you're going to do the casting. In some ways, you set yourself up for a kind of guy dominated sort of thing. For a while, they had to kind of stop casting teams of buff dudes because they kept winning, and it seemed like it was just going to be buff dudes all the time. So they just kind of stopped casting them. I think they have some of the same issues. I think there's some of the same tendency, although that show is pretty good, or was pretty good for a really long time, about not casting kind of four personality disorders, which I've always appreciated, about that particular show. So,
there was actually a point that I wanted to make earlier about casting, which is that I know that, in relation to sexism, I just completely forgot, which is I know that it is harder for Survivor's casting to find professional women willing to go on the show as opposed to professional men.
I'm sure that's true. And anytime you talk about casting a reality show, right, you got to start with the fact that the show can never do anything about the fact that it's limited to people who want to go on the show.
Right.
So
right.
It's always important to keep in mind that if the show winds up with whatever mix of people it winds up with, you know, you can place whatever expectation you want, that the show will do the best it can to find a mix of people. It doesn't come off, you know, as if it only cares about this kind of guy or that kind of guy. But ultimately, the show is limited to a pool. The biggest, you know, the biggest limitation on who you can cast on a reality show is they got to want to go on a reality show, you know?
So do you feel like, hypothetically, male executive A and female executive A, you know, both have identical positions. You feel like it would be more problematic for the female executive to, and what her life would be like after the fact, to go on Survivor than male executive A, where it might be just looked at as like, oh wow, this guy is a real go-getter.
I don't know if I think it would be more problematic, and I don't know what those people would experience in their own lives, but it wouldn't surprise me if It wouldn't surprise me if it was harder to find high-level professional women who felt comfortable taking that kind of break from both their work responsibilities and their family responsibilities to do this particular thing. I don't know. I haven't given that a lot of thought. It instinctively didn't surprise me that much.
My understanding is that that is the case, not just at high level, but at mid level. The other issue being, too, not just like a question of competing commitments, but also a question of the way, you know, maybe men valorize this type of adventure a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a sexist remark for me, but like that would be my, societal observation is that, you know, I know personally more guys who would want to do that kind of adventure than girls, as opposed to like its consequences in their lives.
Right. Maybe. I think maybe that's true. I think that might be true. I mean, these are all kind of hypotheses that I think are interesting and certainly could affect casting. Like I said, I don't necessarily think any of this is intentional on anybody's part. It's just a matter of the fact that for me, the way it plays out over a long period of time becomes something that makes me like the show less.
Linda, right. Do you feel like female Survivor players may be a little more inhibited in how they play the game, whereas a male Survivor player may say, hey, I'm going to make whatever move is in my best interest. A female Survivor player may say, well, people are going to think I'm a bitch if I make this move or I betray this person. Do you think that goes into people's mindsets when they're playing the game even now?
I don't know. I mean, that would be a great thing to ask them. I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised if it did. I wouldn't blame them if it did. But because I do think there is greater tendency to kind of villainize women for aggressive behavior and stuff like that. But, you know, honestly, anybody who goes on a show like this, there's going to be a certain amount of blowback about whatever you do and however you behave. So I don't know. That would be a great question to put to them.
I know it's really apples and oranges, but when Dawn last season voted out Brenda after Brenda had gotten her teeth, she was just eviscerated on social media, and people were horrified that Dawn did something like that. And I still alleged that it's not a fair comparison, that if Dawn was a man and did that to Brenda or to another man, then the response would not have been that bad. Now, I know Dawn was crying all the time, and then she basically like wanted sympathy from people and then voted them out. So it was a, you know, again, not a perfect scenario, but I still think that we are harder on female players who betray the confidence of other players on Survivor than we would be on men who do the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's always been my position that there's absolutely no such thing as an honorable or dishonorable vote in Survivor ever. There's no such thing as that. You can be a nice person or you can be a nasty person, but it has nothing to do with who you vote for, because everybody's trying to get everybody else voted off. I don't ever believe in making it a personal character test, whether you vote for another person or the same. That is why my favorite, quote unquote, favorite person to watch get upset on Survivor is Les. You know?
Yeah.
But because there was all this business about, you know, you're betraying me and all that stuff. But Les didn't get a lot of traction with that argument, I don't think. Outside of his own mind, I guess. I think with Dawn, you know, I do think you're probably right that women are a lot more subject to people saying like you're a nasty betrayer and all that stuff. But again, you know, there's so much that goes into how these narratives are different. How Dawn acts is different. You know, the business about her teeth, that is a truly strange moment, the business with the teeth. You know, I mean, who knows? Maybe if she hadn't cried so much, people would not see it as such a betrayal. But at the same time, you know, why is crying worse than anything else? I don't know.
Linda, do you have a pick for who is going to win Survivor Blood versus Water?
Well, right now, I'm pretty impressed by Tyson. Right now, I think Tyson's playing a really good game, and I don't think he's making a lot of enemies. But again, you're always guessing. But I'm leaning towards Tyson at this point.
And do you have a rooting interest, or is that completely aligned?
You know, I don't think I have a rooting interest very much. I don't know who I'd be rooting for at this point. None of these people are people that I'm kind of passionately attached to. I mean, when you're looking at people like when they were trying to wring all that drama out of Hayden and Pat, I was like, well, oh, I don't care.
Well, let's talk about that for really, really quick. I forgot to mention that the Hayden and Kat thing and how that played out. There's loads of gender things to talk about there.
That whole thing to me was so dumb because on the one hand, look, I don't think either one of those people. Well, look, they both seem like very nice people, but. But I think that what you have there is people who are involved. They like each other a lot. They come on Survivor. They've both done reality TV before. And when they get to that point where he can step in for her or not, this was another one I blamed on Probst. The fact that he says, you know, Hayden says, I care more about the relationship than I do about the game. Okay, I'm going to put that to the test. Will you take her spot? Well, then why wouldn't you say to her, if you care about the relationship more than the game, tell him not to take your spot? It becomes cyclical. It makes no sense at all that anybody, if you love the person, you have to take their place on. Oh, so dumb, that whole thing.
How did you feel about the way Hayden sort of talked her out of it?
That was pretty brilliant.
Long term.
You either think it's brilliantly manipulative or you just think it's coincidentally turned out to be a great thing to do. I mean, I think he approached it like, hey, I think he made it clear to her he didn't really want to do it, but, kind of nudged her and she wound up saying, well, okay, fine, I'll do it, which she's the returning player. Come on. You got to be willing to play the game, for God's sake.
All right, now, Linda, if somebody from Survivor is listening to this podcast, and I have on good authority that at times people who make some decisions do listen to this show, do you have one piece of constructive criticism that you would like to see the show follow going forward?
I would say broaden the focus on the kinds of stories that are followed so that they're not all clashes of dudes waving their torches at each other.
I don't know. Okay. And bring back Sophie?
Absolutely. Sophie, I could probably come up with a bunch more, but I would have to have Wikipedia in front of me because, like I said, my memory is now far too packed with old Survivors.
Yeah, I know we talked about Sophie and Kim a lot, but Denise is another one that was
a strong
winner who
she played great.
Like not even a year ago, and it was almost like we've completely forgotten her as well.
Completely. She was great.
Okay. All right, so if you want to hear more from Linda, go check out the should you send people to the blog and then they can get the podcast from the blog?
You can get the podcast under Pop Culture Happy Hour from, your iTunes or your whatever your podcast client is. Or you can come to npr.org/PCHH and you can find all the podcast episodes there.
You're advertising your competitor, Rob. Rob, you shouldn't have let this. You got to cut this part out.
Steven, podcast is a time-shifted medium. That there's no reason why somebody could not listen to Rob as a podcast and Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can.
Nerding out about Survivor. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And also, Linda, where can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at NPR Monkey C.
Okay. And Stephen Fishback, of course, you can follow him at Stephen Fishback on Twitter.
Yes, please.
There you go. Linda, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Oh, thank you, Rob.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm sure we are going to get a lot of comments about this. So go ahead, leave us your comments. Just one rule, please be civil to each other in the comments. Please, I know we're talking about a lot of hot button issues. So please, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Just be respectful to everybody else who also has an opinion on the page. Okay? Be nice.
Nope. All right.
Otherwise, this is why we can't have nice things. All right. thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Good talking to you guys.
Okay. All right, and there you have it. That was Linda Holmes joining us to talk about some tough stuff here on a special edition of Rob Has a Podcast. Now, if you are a first-time listener to Rob has a podcast, and sometimes when we have people who are outside of the direct Survivor community, this tends to happen. Welcome aboard. I hope you like the show. If you want to hear more about Survivor going forward, we would love it if you would subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, which is our main feed for Rob as a podcast, or if you only care about Survivor going forward and just want to hear those shows, you can listen to those on iTunes at robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast. All right, so here's what's coming up this week on Rob Has a Podcast. Tomorrow, on Sunday, I'm going to talk to Rich Tackenberg about SNL and recap the new SNL with Kerry Washington, plus the one from last week as well. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to, on Sunday night at a special Pacific Coast time, I believe at 10 p.m. Pacific time, I'm going to speak with Josh Wigler about this week's episode of The Walking Dead. Then on Monday night at 7:15 p.m. Pacific or 10:15 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to speak with Jessica Leese about episode number 6 of The Amazing Race 23. And so we are going to have our special guests on that show. Ryan and Abby from The Amazing Race are going to join us to talk about what's going on the new season of The Amazing Race. And then on Wednesday, we will do Survivor Know-It-Alls. And that will also be at a special later time. I have to work late on Wednesday. I know that a lot of East Coast people will not be thrilled, but maybe some West Coast people will be. So that's going to be on at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. So if you are a Pacific Coaster and you want to watch Survivor Know-It-Alls right after the episode, you'll have that opportunity on Wednesday, and I'll speak to it looks like two people who are going to be kicked off of Redemption Island this upcoming Thursday, and then we'll do our Survivor podcast. Jonathan Penner joins us on Thursday, and then this week we're also getting down to 12 people, and you know what that means. We're going to check in with our friend AJ Mass as well later on into the weekend next week. So a lot to do. We appreciate all your support and all your votes for Podcast Awards. You could do so every day at podcastawards.com. Hope everybody has a great weekend and a great week, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye.